जय जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य भूरचंद्र जयाद्वैत चंद्र जय जय नित्यानंद जय जय गदाधर जय श्रीनिवास जय मुकुंद वासुदेव जय हरिदास।
हाय कृष्ण एवरीवन, वेलकम एंड थैंक यू फॉर जॉइनिंग अस टुडे। My name is Ian Nene and I'm here from the Bhakti Vedanta Manor. Very excited to be having this special session with you all. I'd like to specifically thank the GBC SPT team for giving us a forum to discuss important subject matters with regards to our Krishna consciousness movement, specifically leading up to Gaur Purnim, which is coming up really soon. And so we have a wonderful topic, and this topic is known as amplifying the sound of Shastra. And who better to have this discussion with but His Grace Sutapa Prabhu, a residential monk at the Bhaktivedanta Manor where I reside, who has been living here for the past 20 years and really revels in discussing the scriptures, studying the scriptures, and looking for interesting ways to share the scriptures with others. So we're going to bring him in and have an interesting discussion based on that. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Ian. And yes. Hare Krishna to all our viewers. Really happy to be with you all today as we prepare for Gaur Purnima, the most auspicious festival in the Gaudiya Vaishnav calendar.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you for having us. We're going to get right straight into it. My first question for you is, what are the Gaudiya Shastras and what do they actually cover and why are they considered so special by Gaudiya Vaishnavas?
Yeah, I'd like to share with you something on the Shastra, which is such a broad treasure house of wisdom. But first, maybe just to kind of give some context to what we're talking about today, amplifying the sound of Shastra in the run-up to Gaur Purnima 2022. I was just thinking about this, of how whenever you read about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in, like, you know, encyclopedias on internet sites, or even within many of our own ISKCON in-house resources, we often stress upon how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a God-intoxicated saint, obviously an undercover incarnation of Krishna. And we tend to focus on his chanting and his Harinam Sankirtan, which we know was the essence of his mission. But the amazing thing is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also an incredible philosopher. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was an incredible communicator of Shastra. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shared wisdom with a variety of people, drawing upon the ancient teachings that are there within our tradition. And just to share with you, sometimes I think of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Rath Yatra. You hear about how Mahaprabhu is there and then there are different circles around him, almost like guarding him. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we can also think of Mahaprabhu and different circles of associates that he has. So if you imagine Mahaprabhu to be in the middle, then right around him are his intimate associates, Ramananda Raya and Svarup Damodar in the Gambira. And then around those associates, you have his other intimate companions in Jagannath Puri, in Navadvip, in Vrindavan when he goes there. Then around them, you have the preachers of Mahaprabhu. Around them, you have the other great Vaishnav traditions that Mahaprabhu talks to. Around that circle, you have the Vedantic traditions, the impersonalists and the others that he speaks to. And maybe a further circle outside of that is the other religions that he speaks to, the Qazi, the Patans, like that. But the amazing thing is, in each one of these circles, Mahaprabhu is interfacing with them on the basis of Shastra. Like in the most intimate circle of Ramananda Raya and Svarup Damodar, they're discussing the intricacies of rasa from Shastra. With his associates, for example, in Jagannath Puri, Gadada Pandit, Mahaprabhu is discussing Bhagavatam, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, with his preachers, Rupa Shiksha, Sanatan Shiksha, when he instructs them, he is drawing on so much Shastra. When Mahaprabhu speaks to the Vaishnav Sampradayas, then he's bringing in so much Shastra. When he's debating with Sarvabhauma or Prakashananda or the Vedantists, the impersonalists, he's debating on the basis of Shastra, speaking Vedanta, speaking the true understandings of the Vedic conclusions. And even when Mahaprabhu talks with other religionists, he's sometimes quoting their Shastra. So to the Qazi, he quotes the Quran. So it's amazing that Mahaprabhu, so much of his preaching was, of course, as we know, chanting and dancing and ecstasy and spreading the holy name. But you see that so much of it was also based on Shastra. And it's something that sometimes we overlook.
Definitely, definitely. And that's amazing how you presented that as well. It's magical because we never really think about it. Even myself, I always just imagine him getting in ecstasy in different spaces and just imparting that ecstasy to others. But really, probably in the intricacies of his discussions, he does highlight on these important things. And I think that's why it's important for us to have this discussion.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, and as we'll maybe talk about later on, what is the actual balance between the chanting of the holy name and immersion in Shastra, and not just the balance, but what is the relationship between them? And we can maybe touch on that later on. But yeah, coming back to your question about what is the range of Shastra that's contained within the Gaudiya canon, I'd just like to share a little slideshow with you, which I have on my screen now. Maybe you can just give me a go ahead when everyone can see it.
Yeah, we're good.
And are we good to go? Can everyone see that?
Yeah, everyone can see it, yeah.
So this is just a few things I wanted to share with you about the absolute beauty and how unique the Gaudiya canon of Shastra is. Here we have a beautiful quote of Prabhupada. He said, "Yes, it's a revolution. That's what I think as I write on and on. A revolution to change the entire course of human history." So Srila Prabhupada was really bringing the Shastra to the world, seeing that Shastra would really create that revolution. And we are really the Sampradaya of the pen. Here we have Vyasadeva, who had that vision of Kali Yuga and saw that people's memories would decline, and therefore compiling, dividing and systemizing and bringing out the essence of all the Vedic knowledge for generations to come. And then, of course, more specifically, we have the Goswamis of Vrindavan. And the Goswamis of Vrindavan, their contribution, again, in so many areas, but the Goswamis were managers, they were leaders, they were pujaris, they were counselors, they were loved by everyone, but they were also writers, they were also deep theologians, and they left a body of knowledge for generations to come. Nana Shastra, Vicharane Kunipano, Sadharma Sanstapako. They were able to draw out the essence of Shastra and share it with the world. And what I just wanted to share with you was a little bit about the expanse of what the Goswamis actually wrote about, and the kind of variation and variety that is contained within Gaudiya Shastra. If we look at the Goswamis, then we see that there were many philosophical works that they wrote. Perhaps the most famous, Jiva Goswami, who's known as the Tattva Acharya. And Jiva Goswami writes the Satsandarbha, which is, comprehensively delineating Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana, the complete philosophical journey of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So they wrote many philosophical books. Not just that, they wrote commentaries. For example, Sanatan Goswami writes a commentary on the 10th canto, Brihat Vaishnava Toshani, to bring out more of the jewels of wisdom and the beauty of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami writes Gopal Champu, his commentary on the 10th canto. So they also wrote commentaries. Mm-hmm. Not just that, but the Goswamis were writing Rasa Shastra. They were bringing out the nuances, the subtleties, the various expressions and stimulants and exhibitions of ecstasy that take place in the relationship between Krishna and his devotees. And of course, presenting Rasa Shastra, we have the Rasa Acharya Rupa Goswami, who writes Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and then later on Ujjval Nilamani, which are really profound expressions of divine mellow. Not just that, but the Goswamis write manuals, they write guidebooks. Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, they write the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is almost like a guidebook, a handbook for Vaishnav practice. Jiva Goswami writes Harinamamrita Vyakarana, which is a manual on Sanskrit grammar through the medium of teaching people it through the holy name. It's amazing. So they also wrote manuals, practical guides.
Wow.
You can see it's incredible. So much is there. They weren't just philosophical and practical, but they were also poetic. Many of our viewers may or may not be aware, but Rupa Goswami writes an incredible set of poems known as Chitra Kavitvani, which is picture poetry. And you'll remember this because we did it at a retreat recently.
Yeah.
really, really mind-blowing poetry in different formations and pictorial representations, which is truly mind-blowing. So they were, we know one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is to be a poet, a kavi.
Oh, yeah.
And not just that, they wrote pastimes and stories. For example, Raghunath Das Goswami writes Mukta Charita, the book of the story of how Krishna was planting pearls in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and from those pearls that he planted, many, many bushes of pearls came about. Raghunath Das Goswami writes Dan Kaili Kalmudi, the story of Krishna as the tax collector in Govardhan and his beautiful interactions with the gopis. So we see such a variety of shastra that the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition has. And I'll share one more thing with you, which is that the reason we want to amplify the sound of Shastra, and especially the sound of the Gaudiya Shastra, is because the Gaudiya Shastra is the most advanced theology in creation. And that's not a sectarian claim, because if we try to understand which is the most advanced theology in the world, we look towards the theology which has the most expansive revelation of truth. The Shastra or the scriptures or the body of knowledge which covers the most amount of areas, which kind of connects with every aspect of creation. Not just that, but the most advanced theology doesn't just cover a wide expanse of topics, but it explores them in great depth. And perhaps the most important topic is the relationship with God. And therefore, the most advanced theology in the world gives you the greatest depth and intimacy of connection with God. It gives you the greatest and most intimate understanding of God's personality, God's activities, and God's relationship with his devotees. Not just that, but the most advanced theology in the world also creates auspiciousness, auspiciousness in the life of the practitioner, auspiciousness in the world, auspiciousness for the future of creation. Not just that, but the most advanced theology in the world is also accessible. There's no barriers. Anyone from any background, without necessarily having any set qualification, can engage with the most advanced theology because it gives many points of entrance. Mm-hmm. And not just that, but the most advanced theology in the world is the most beautiful. It's not just philosophically deep, but it's aesthetically charming. It's beautiful. And it, the language, the descriptions, the way in which it touches the heart, the way in which it makes the head spin because of its unique description, that is unparalleled. So the reason I'm showing you this is because when we look at the Gaudiya canon, then we can say that it is the most advanced theology in the world, because on these points, you would not be able to find another theology in the world which would compare with the Gaudiya revelation in that way. So I'll just stop there on that. And that's just kind of like a precursor to our discussion.
No, definitely.
We want to amplify the sound of Shastra, because the Shastra is just, it's just incredible.
For sure. I mean, thank you for how you just displayed that. It's so magical just getting to see from that perspective. But it just begs the question that's just coming to my mind at this moment, is that, you know, in comparison to other theologies, why isn't this knowledge, and how amazing it is, how intricate it is, why is it not the most popular? Why is it not the one that's reaching the masses? Why is it that it's, you know, not being considered or being discussed in a variety of places and locations in comparison to other theologies?
That's a brilliant question. Yeah, you often think, like, if the Hare Krishna movement is, like, so amazing, why is it still relatively quite small in this big wide world of 7 billion people? And these Shastras, why are they not known to the world? Well, I would say we could look at it from two perspectives. One perspective is Srila Prabhupada did say that if you're selling diamonds, then, you know, only a few people have the capacity to buy it. And therefore, you know, in a world today where people are looking for instant gratification, they're looking for material benefit, they have many other concerns and desires. You know, Shastra is not the immediate place that they go to. They have other ports of call to fulfill their desires in a more immediate way. And therefore, we can understand that some of it is to do with maybe the lack of qualification in the world to take it up. But we can also take responsibility, and we can say that perhaps some of it is to do with us, and maybe the fact that we haven't perhaps done as well as we could have done in terms of effort in trying to share the Shastra with the world, and also in terms of ingenuity and deep thinking as to how we can really make Shastra relevant for the world that we live in today. Srila Prabhupada came across to America, and it said that he only felt really confident to come to America once the three cantos of Bhagavatam had been printed. And that was almost like, you know, it's not that I'm coming to America, but I'm carrying the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam is coming to America. So Prabhupada really had that faith in Shastra, and he presented it in a way that it could be really made accessible to everyone. And we see how much Prabhupada did to make Shastra kind of so widespread. I don't know the statistic off the top of my head, but in 1972, the devotees in America ordered a printing of the Bhagavad Gita, 1 million copies, I think. Wow. In a single printing. And I think it said that the carriages that were needed to take the paper to the printers kind of stretched for like 3 miles or something. And in 1972, that was actually a world record. No book in history had been printed with an order of 1 million to be printed.
Wow.
And the devotees did it. The devotees were making Shastra available. They were amplifying the sound of Shastra. So it can be done if there's desire, if there's deep thinking, and if there's a deep meditation on how to present Shastra authentically, but in a very dynamic and relevant way. We understand that Shastra has everything that people are looking for. So why is Shastra not bigger than it is at the moment? Well, some of it may just be a reason outside of our control. And a lot of it may be that maybe we have to up our game a little bit more.
No, definitely. As you were speaking, it kind of felt like it's probably like Srila Prabhupada's opportunity is giving us some service. So we can kind of be able to expand and see how we can be able to share and be part of this chain that's doing so much amazing things for the world. So it's kind of, this is your chance to do something, guys. And I appreciate that. Speaking of Srila Prabhupada,
just on the power of Shastra.
Yeah.
Dhananjaya Prabhu, who was, you know, one of the pioneers of Bhaktivedanta Mana, he often tells this story of how one day Prabhupada just said, out of the blue, he said, it's too late. And everyone was wondering, you know, Prabhupada said, it's too late. He said, even if all the temples close down, even if all the devotees leave the movement, it's too late because the books are out there, because the Shastra is out there. And what will happen is if everything shuts down, Krishna willing it won't, but if everything shuts down, Prabhupada said, one person will pick up these books, will pick up the Shastra, they will read it, and they will recreate everything all over again. So, So that's amazing. That's the power of Shastra, that from the knowledge of Shastra, you can revolutionize the world. Tadvag Vishargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Prati Shlokam Abaddhavatyapi, the Bhagavatam says, this literature will create a revolution in the misdirected civilization that we're confronted with. So yeah, it's so powerful. I sometimes think we may not even be fully aware of what we're carrying. Prabhupada called them time bombs, but you know,
the
treasure houses, yeah.
No, for sure. No. I must say your enthusiasm as well, expressing that, is infectious. It makes me, you know, value and appreciate what we have. So thank you for that. So just you were speaking about Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, we read his purports, and Srila Prabhupada gives a strong emphasis on chanting the holy name, strong emphasis on engaging in devotional service. And this is somewhat of like a consistent theme that you're getting in what might also feel, let's say, for a new reader like myself, a little bit redundant, that this is the thing, you know, keep on engaging with the holy name, engaging in devotional service. So my question is, if one's already actively engaging in chanting and engaging in devotional service, what's the role of Shastra then? Because it's almost as if Shastra is convincing us to get to that point. So if one is really on this point, what's the value that Shastra brings?
Yeah, isn't it? It is a very interesting point. It's like when Mahaprabhu goes to Gaya and he meets Ishwarapuri, and Ishwarapuri chastises him. He tells him, Murkha tumi, you're a fool. Tomar nahek vedantadikar, you don't have any qualification to study Shastra. Krishna mantra japa sada a mantra sad. He just says, just chant Krishna's names. That's the essence of everything. So even Ishwarapuri tells Mahaprabhu, why are you studying all these things? Just chant Krishna's names. Of course. But then we find that Mahaprabhu goes to, instruct Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, and specifically tells them that write the Shastra, Bhakta Bhakti Krishna Prem Tatvira Nidhar, Vaishnavera Kritya Ar Vaishnava Achar. He specifically told them, Bhakta Bhakti Bhakta Krishna Prem. Teach people about bhakti, teach people who's a devotee, teach people who's Krishna, Tattva Nidhar, write all of these truths down so that they can be accessed for generations to come. Vaishnavera Kritya Ar Vaishnava Achar, teach people how a Vaishnav should act and how a Vaishnav should be in character. So Mahaprabhu did want also this knowledge to be written down. Why is Shastra relevant? The first thing is to understand that there are different types of Shastra. Some Shastra can be very ritualistic, can be very speculative. There is Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and generally Vaishnavas are not engaging with those aspects of Shastra so much. But then we have Bhakti Shastra. And that Bhakti Shastra is very, very powerful for awakening one's consciousness and allowing one to engage in the Abhideya or the process of chanting the holy name with faith. This is why the Shastra was given, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, Maya Mugda Jivera Nahi Swata Krishna Gyan Jivere Kripaya Koile Krishna Ved Puran. Maya Mugda, the living entities, Swata Krishna Gyan, they were completely bewildered. They don't know who they are. What's the goal of life? Jivere Kripaya, and therefore to give them a chance to show compassion and kindness. Koile Krishna Ved Puran, the Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas and the Puranas and the Bhakti Shastra so that jivas could awaken their bhakti. So although the Abhideya of chanting the holy name is there, the Shastra, specifically the Bhakti Shastra, is really giving one the insight into how to live, into how to allay one's doubts, into how to respond to the complexity of this world, in how to increase one's faith and eradicate doubts. And all of these things help one to give their heart in chanting the holy name. And so Shastra and chanting the holy name go together. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Harikatha is the Swarup Shakti of Hari Kirtan. Just as Radharani is the Swarup Shakti of Krishna, and we never worship Krishna without Radharani, we don't do Hari Kirtan without Hari Katha, because there is a symbiosis there, that the Hari Katha gives faith, the Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramishyati, third canto says, 25:25, that you get faith, you get attraction, and you develop devotion and attachment by discussing Shastra with others. And then one can really chant the holy name with depth.
All right. Yeah. Wow. No, thank you for that. So there is a correlation. So we can say that the deeper you go in your Shastric study and your connection with Shastra, then in that the deeper you can get into your chanting.
Yeah, it's almost like they feed each other. The Shastra almost is cleansing the mind. And then the Shastra also gives a meditation in the mind. Because what the Shastra does is it, one word for it or one name for Shastra is Grantha. Like we say, Grantha Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So Grantha comes from the Sanskrit word Granthi. Granthi means a knot. So Grantha is that thing which pierces the knot or unties the knot. So what Shastra does is it detaches you from the material world, detaches you from material conditioning, and it then simultaneously attaches you to the spiritual world and introduces you to that transcendent realm. So when we're chanting and we're able to chant free of conditioned consciousness, and we're able to chant with a positive meditation of the spiritual world, then that chanting becomes very powerful. But if we haven't engaged in Harikatha, in investing in our relationship with Shastra, we may be chanting, but we may still be very much anchored to this world and lacking a transcendental meditation. And therefore, the chanting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, it's like the wedding boat, who are rowing and rowing all night, rowing and rowing. And when the sun rose in the morning, they would realize they were in the same place because the anchor was down and they were rowing, but they were just going in circles. So the chanting of the holy name, to maintain material attachments while chanting the holy name, is a problem. So the Shastra comes in to do a transcendental operation on your Krishna consciousness.
Wow, I like that. Transcendental operation, that's what the Shastras do. I have another question based on this as well. Is it the words of the Shastra that are important, or is it like the overarching message that the Shastra is trying to give? And so my maybe connected to that is, does one need to personally engage with the Shastra itself to get that benefit or whatever benefit is being underlined? Or
let me just clarify. Are you asking like, is it just giving people the philosophy of the Bhagavatam? Do we actually have to try to get them to read the actual verses of the Bhagavatam? Or is it just that we want to communicate what the Bhagavatam is saying? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, no, exactly. Because, you know, maybe, you know, the context of, you know, the sages of Naimisharanya being placed in a particular space and having this exchange with, you know, these personalities, and then all these pastime being revealed might also maybe be too far out for some individuals. But maybe the message that is being imparted to Parikshit Maharaj in this particular is what's more important. So does one need to actually go through that like system or what's being expressed, or can one just understand the overarching message and, you know, carry on deepening their experience in Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, I would say both are necessary. We have to communicate the knowledge of the Shastra in the language of the people of the time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, Vaishnavas should be like satellites that reflect the light of the sun, not like magistrates who imprison criminals in jail. And so what he says is that we receive so much from Shastra, and we should be like satellites. We should then represent that according to time, place, and circumstance is in proper language that people can understand. And we shouldn't just be like magistrates who imprison criminals in jail. In other words, we take the knowledge and then we just take it in and then we just don't think about it and don't give it to anyone and don't do anything with it. So yeah, we have to represent. So what I would say is we need both. And the reason that we do need to take people to the original Shastra, yes, the Sanskrit words of the Bhagavatam, is because one reflection I've had on this, and maybe you've also seen this, is that books like the Bhagavatam, they are almost like, zip files, right? So, you know, like, there's this much that you see, but actually contained within it is so much. And according to the consciousness of the reader, you can come to the Shastra and from this you can get this much. But when your consciousness expands, you can give this much. And when your consciousness expands even more, you can get this much. And that's why you can keep reading the Shastra and having newer and newer realizations. So the Shastra is transcendental. The words of Shastra are transcendental because it's not a static type of knowledge. It's a knowledge which is ever expanding. It's a knowledge which is being more and more accessible according to the elevation of one's consciousness. And so as one grows, one can get more and more from it. And so I would say it is powerful to go to the direct Shastra. You know, like we could sing the Guru Puja song in English, and that's nice. And we do that actually every day. We don't sing it, but we recite the translation.
Yeah.
Or we could sing Mangal Arati in English, which also would be very nice. But there is a special potency in the words of the acharyas, the words of the Shastra. There is that sound vibration is carrying, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's words. It's come from his lotus mouth. It's special because it doesn't just carry information, but it carries a certain potency and power that can affect one's heart. So I would say, yes, let's give the message of Shastra in contemporary language, but let us take people on a journey to actually get to the Shastra so that they can begin mining it and exploring it and finding their own jewels as they elevate their consciousness and are able to access more.
Amazing, amazing. I really love that. That was powerful. And the zip file analogy is also quite magnificent, I must say. It's like a zip file. You can unlock so many things after that, based on your consciousness, of course. Now, my next question is, how can we individually go deeper into the Shastra? You know, I've met many individuals, including myself, where maybe I've gone through the scriptures, but I'm not feeling like I've gained much from it. I'm pushing to kind of like just move from one end to the other. Is there any secrets or any like, you know, jewels that you can give us on how we can kind of go deeper or how you've gone deeper yourself?
That's a great question. Can you just hold that thought for 1 second? What I just wanted to show you is one slide because it just kind of relates to the previous topic that we were discussing. Okay. And you can just give me a shout when you can see my screen. So connecting people to Shastra, because this is what we were just talking about. And what I've kind of noticed in whatever experience I've had in sharing Krishna consciousness with others is that connecting people to Shastra is almost like we have to take people on a journey. So sometimes what we have to do when we're sharing Krishna consciousness is in the beginning, we may just have to give very, very general wisdom. We speak things according to the needs, interests, and concerns of the people. We try to help them to develop faith that we know what they're going through. We know what needs, issues, and concerns they have. And we immediately try to begin to stimulate them to think about something more. And that could just be through general wisdom that we give people. When we want to go a little bit deeper, we don't just give general wisdom, but we give Krishna wisdom. We start really bringing spiritual concepts into the equation. We really start to bring spiritual tools and ideas and paradigms into people's lives. And that's almost like a deepening of their knowledge, going from the general wisdom to the kind of Krishna wisdom, the specific, kind of tattva or some of the truths, the ontological truths that we present in Shastra. And then what I find is from there, really what we may then try to do is give them package Shastra. So that means what we try to do is begin to introduce them to the Shastra, maybe in a bite-sized way whereby they can, begin to grasp the language, the tone, the mood, the flow, the structure. And eventually what we're trying to do is get them then to the original Shastra where they're interfacing with that freely in their own inspired and enthused way. Now, I'm not trying to suggest here that we don't give people immediately access to the original Shastra, we may well do that. But we may also want to sometimes think that while giving them the Shastra, maybe sometimes we need to do these other steps as well so that they really can mine that Shastra that is accessible to them in the deepest way. And so this can sometimes be a model that we can use to ensure that people do really connect to Shastra and find those jewels that we're talking about.
Yeah, thank you for that. Actually, just connected with those slides which you just shared, I thought it's just also coming to mind that we might start expressing like the general wisdom of Shastra to individuals. But then individuals themselves in their own research might start getting themselves into more of like the deeper stuff based on their own level of inquisitiveness. So is there a way that we can also be able to monitor this? I'm just thinking in the context of them finding like their own things. They may be seeing some things from Shastra that might be a little bit bold statements, some might be seemingly contradictory. So do you have any thoughts on this or how we can work around that?
Okay, as in how to deal with parts of Shastra that are challenging for people or difficult for them to digest or seemingly contradictory or even controversial, is that?
Yeah, because they can access this knowledge also for themselves in one sense based on their inquisitiveness. And then maybe that will also bring the question of
Searching it up on the internet or something like that.
Exactly, yeah. Or you know, finding another book or seeing a book, being recommended and then finding that book and reading something that for them might be a little bit too difficult to stomach.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, as we know, Guru Sadhu Shastra Vakya Chitete Koriya Aikya, Naratam says that Guru Sadhu and Shastra all have to go together. And this is another important point. Today we're talking about amplifying the sound of Shastra, but that also means we need to amplify the number of gurus and the number of sadhus who can then help people to understand Shastra. Because you can have a lot of Shastra out there, but if people don't have access to Vaishnavas, then it can become challenging, you know. Mahabharata says, Tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhinna nashav rishir yasya matam na bhinnam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam. The truths of dharma are hidden within the hearts of the Vaishnavas. So they really bring that out and help people. And it is a challenge because we present the Shastra to the world. The Shastra is accessible. And then people begin to read and they may come across challenging concepts. They may come across a tone that they're not used to. They may come across viewpoints that clash with what the postmodern mind can digest. Mm-hmm. And then it can put people off Shastra. And therefore, it's interesting that the Gaudiya tradition is a living tradition. Shastra is also a living tradition. The Goswamis wrote commentaries, bhasyas, on the original Shastra to make it relevant of that for that time. And therefore, what we also need is more and more things which help to translate Shastra for the modern mind. To intercept many of these difficult things that people will encounter or so-called controversial statements that may be there and to try to intercept that and help people to contextualize it. A really, really big study in the world is hermeneutics and exegesis, which is the ways and means by which we understand and interpret spiritual texts. And the fact of the matter is that Shastra is complex because Shastra, sometimes statements may be emphasizing different things. Sometimes statements may be having different motivations behind them. Sometimes statements may be appealing to people who are of different levels of consciousness, and therefore sometimes you can easily find a seeming contradiction, but through a proper analysis one can be able to frame every single statement of Shastra and understand how it relates in the wider context. So in answer to your question, we need as many people as possible to help people decode and understand the Shastra. Otherwise, you're right, it can end up going the other way, you know, where people may feel put off or may feel turned away from reading Shastra.
Definitely. And it might end up having an inhibiting effect on their pursuits in that way. Also, just connected with this slightly is, we're just recently celebrating Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance there. And, there's this understanding that Bhaktisiddhanta kind of repackaged and reinvented Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works and the works of the Acharyas. And then Srila Prabhupada came and did the same thing, reinvented and repackaged Bhaktisiddhanta's mission and mood and his message. Now, is it for us to do the same thing with Srila Prabhupada's works, considering the kind of position we place Srila Prabhupada on? Should we, do we have a right in one sense to kind of repackage and reinvent Srila Prabhupada's works in a different way, like in the same way the parampara is doing so? Can we be able to fit that responsibility? I don't know what you think about that.
Well, Srila Prabhupada's books are the law books, he said, for thousands of years to come. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada's books remain intact. They are the textbooks which will always be the reference point of the Hare Krishna movement. And we preserve them, those books, with the greatest respect and reverence, because... yes, they are the words of the pure devotee. But what Srila Prabhupada did want is what I kind of expressed previously. He did want devotees to express and share the knowledge that they've grasped from his books in their own words. Let me share this with you. I did quote this. You can tell me once you can see my slide.
Yeah, it's on.
Yeah, I quoted this previously in today's conversation, but in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's famous essay on the Bhagavat, he writes, "Most readers are mere repositories of facts and statements made by other people. But this is not study. The student is to read the facts with a view to create and not with the object of fruitless retention. Students, like satellites, should reflect whatever light they receive from authors and not imprison the facts and thoughts, just as magistrates imprison the convicts in jail." So just to reiterate that point, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, a prolific author, began writing at age 12, wrote over 100 books. Srila Prabhupada really followed this. He made Shastra accessible, relevant, practical. But now let me share with you that when Srila Prabhupada came to America in 1966, in 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada decided it was time to resurrect Back to Godhead. The magazine that, you know, he was so dear to him that he was printing and distributing in India. And right there in 26 Second Avenue, they began a small printing press to print over the Back to Godhead. And practically from day one, Prabhupada looked at his young disciples who had been with him maybe for 6 months and told them, in the Back to Godhead, one article, my Guru Maharaj, one article, me, and one article, you. Prabhupada said, don't be dull. Write something, 2 lines, 3 lines, but you must write your realizations. So Srila Prabhupada really wanted this. There can sometimes be a sense of, why do we need to write? Because Prabhupada wrote everything, and his books are the best books in the world. His books are undoubtedly the best books in the world, but we have to convince and inspire the world that, yes, his books are the best books in the world. And sometimes we may do that. One way we can do that is by writing our realizations on the best books in the world, such that people read our writings and say, wow, where did you get that from? And with a big smile on our face, we can tell them, those are the books, Prabhupada's books, the best books in the world that you need to go to, because that's where I got it all from. And we want to inspire people in that way. So yeah, we're not reworking Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada's books are perfect, and we want people to go there. But what we will do is represent the knowledge that Prabhupada's given in ways that the modern mind can connect with. It's a great adventure. And it's so satisfying. It's so satisfying when you meet people who don't know anything about Shastra, at least in this life. And we're able to connect it to them in the way in which they feel like, wow, you're talking about everything that's been going on within my heart and mind for years. You've articulated my needs, interests, and concerns like no one's ever been able to do before. And then we can tell them, as I said, with a smile on our face, that, well, it's not me, but these books are living books, and they can answer every question, every doubt, every inquiry you may have. So it's a great event.
That's amazing. Actually, just in the way you've expressed it, it just made me think, kind of like, even with a product that you purchase on Amazon or online, you'll take the one that's got the most reviews from others because you trust their expression or their experience in the particular product. So similarly, they can be able to connect with Prabhupada's books through the reviews of the readers ourselves who are sharing our realizations. That's a very, very powerful point.
Yeah, and just on that point, because as I said, today the topic is amplifying the sound of Shastra. And one of the best ways to amplify the sound of Shastra is by being a living theology yourself. One of the best ways to inspire people to read Shastra is to show that when you read Shastra, this is what you become. This is what happens in your life, and this is what you begin to feel within your own consciousness. And people are like, you know, people should look at the devotees and think, how did you become like that? And then we can tell them that, well, we became like this because we read these amazing books and we accessed this amazing knowledge. So, Dui Bhagavata Dwar. There are two Bhagavatas, the Grantha Bhagavata and the Bhakta Bhagavata. So along with, as we try to amplify the sound of Shastra, we need to become living theologies. We need to become inspired. Shabde pare cha nishnatam brahma nupa shamashrayam. We should be bathing in the transcendental vibration, such that if anyone comes within our vicinity, they feel the potency of that vibration in your clarity of communication, in your potency of communication, and in your communication, which doesn't just touch the mind and intelligence, but touches the heart, because it's the vibration of Shastra. We need to emanate that. So much of amplifying Shastra is becoming a living theology ourselves.
Oh, amazing. Thank you for that. And I think that segues to maybe our last question, which you can conclude with, is how do we go deeper in Shastra? Do you know any tips or tricks? Or connect to that. Like, how can we kind of like go deep? Do you have any suggestions, anything we can try ourselves?
Yeah, we could do a whole session on this, but in the time that we've got, the few minutes that we've got, I'll share two things which I think are the essence of it. If you want to go deeper in Shastra, really what I would say is method and mood. When I say method, what I mean is that there are amazing things that you can do in terms of your approach to your methodology of how you approach Shastra. The method means when you approach Shastra, for example, in an integrative way. So you look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you look at the Bhagavatam, you look at the Gita, and then you start looking at them, cross-referencing them, seeing what it says here, bringing in knowledge from here. Every Shastra enriches your understanding of the other Shastra. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it said that Chaitanya Leela, I may be getting it the wrong way around, but Chaitanya Leela is like, Krishna Leela is like nectar, and Chaitanya Leela is like camphor. And when nectar and camphor come together, then the sweetness just multiplies. So you want to go deeper into Shastra? Read Shastra in an integrative way. This is one methodology of how to do it. You want to go deeper into Shastra? Read commentaries, because commentators give you a deeper insight. Ancient commentators, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sridhar Swami, but also contemporary commentators, commentators of our times who bring that Shastra in modern language. What you can also do with Shastra in terms of method is study it thematically. So one way is to read through the books, but another way is to think of a theme. For example, you can take like a theme like, well, say for example, renunciation. And then look at renunciation in the Bhagavatam, look at renunciation in the CC, look at what Krishna talks about renunciation in the Gita, gather it all together and then build an understanding of that theme through different scriptures. That's another way to approach it. Another way to approach Shastra and go deeper is every Sanskrit word, right? What is that verse now? Prati shloke prakti akshare nana artha koi. The Bhagavatam, Krishna tulya Bhagavata vibhu sarva shroi prati shloke prati akshare nana artha koi. Kaviraj Goswami says, Krishna tulya the Bhagavata is Krishna. Nana artha, there are so many meanings, prati shloke, in every single shloka, not just that, prati akshare, in every single word, in every single syllable, there are many meanings. So you can study Sanskrit, or you can at least look at transliterations, and you can, like we said, it's like a zip file, and then it expands, so you can go in. So there are so many methods by which you can go deeper into the Shastra. And then the other thing I wanted to share with you is the mood. Another way we go deeper into Shastra is the mood with which we approach Shastra. If we approach in a very prayerful way, if before we open the Shastra, we make a prayer to Krishna and say, Krishna, please make my ears open, my heart open, my mind open, so that I can hear what you want me to hear today. Then when we open the Shastra, with that very prayerful mood, seeking to imbibe the qualities, the consciousness of the authors, the consciousness of the characters, then we will find when we approach with that mood, the Shastra begins to touch us and penetrate us on a much deeper level. So much more to be said on this, but if we want to go deeper, develop methodology and develop your mood, and that will really do wonders. So yeah, let's amplify the sound of Shastra within our hearts, and then let's amplify the sound of Shastra in the world.
Amazing. Thank you so much to Tapa Prabhu for that wonderful piece of advice. Definitely, I'll be taking advantage of that right now. Speaking to you is very empowering as well. It encourages one to take the step. So I appreciate your enthusiasm, and I'm sure everyone else does also. So we'll finish there. Would like to also thank again the GBC SP team for giving us a platform where we can have this exchange. on the lead up to Go Purnim, and we hope everyone has a wonderful Go Purnim coming soon. Hare Krishna.
Shila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.